day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've decided to join us today. If you're someone who loves the idea of living in interesting times, well, you could do a lot worse than living right now in the city of Detroit. One reason I think that's true is the really historic effort underway in our city right now. And it's something that has a pretty simple question at its core. What is owed to African Americans as a result of the systemic discrimination we've faced since before our city or nation were even founded? And further, can we come up with a suite of ideas, monetary, cultural, institutional, that might address the yawning gaps that exist between white and black existence in this community because of that history of discrimination? Now, the idea of reparations for African Americans is not new. It's something that was discussed in earnest after the Civil War. The movement rose again in the 1960s when Martin Luther King Jr. and many other civil rights advocates supported reparations as a counterweight to things like slavery and segregation, decades of discrimination in housing and the workplace, and nearly every other part of American life. And in more recent years, we've seen lots of people come forward and write really compellingly about the idea of reparations. I think many of us still remember quite vividly the work that Ta-Nehisi Coates did in The Atlantic in 2014 in his piece, The Case for Reparations, 10,000 words about the history of discrimination and the challenge to address it in the 21st century. In recent years, we've also seen this idea explored and enacted at the local level in lots of different places. Some small towns like Amherst, Massachusetts, and Evanston, Illinois, have implemented reparations in the form of housing investment or new banks, one that's dedicated to serving local African American residents in their respective towns. Even big cities like Boston and Denver and Los Angeles are exploring this issue. And the most populous state in our nation, California, has its own reparations task force. Today, Detroit is part of that conversation as well. 80% of Detroiters approved a 2021 measure at the ballot, creating a task force to study and address the issue of reparations. There's a 13-member task force now researching the harm done to Black Detroiters and coming up with ideas to address it. That task force had its first public meeting on April 13th, and there were lots of really interesting things said, lots of really interesting exchanges about the very idea of trying to make Black Detroiters whole, in a sense. That's where we want to begin the conversation this week, talking about this task force, what its aims are, what the historical wrongs inflicted on Black Detroiters are, and what the task force is thinking about doing to make this city and this state a more equitable place. We're really pleased to have two members of the task force with us. Lauren Hood is a writer, a city planner, and a community developer. She's also a co-chair of Detroit's Reparations Task Force. Lauren, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thanks, Stephen.
Also with us is Keith Williams. He is the Michigan Democratic Black Caucus chair and also a co-chair on Detroit's Reparations Task Force. Keith, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Good morning.
So I'm really excited to have both of you here. I'm really excited to talk about this. I was somebody who was really interested in that first public meeting and what we might learn about what y'all have been up to and what you plan to do. But I want to start with each of you just talking about the purpose of all of this and what it means to study and address the issue of reparations in a city like Detroit. Keith, I'm going to start with you.
You know, I'm really excited about trying to rewrite a wrong. I say to people, we're trying to repair and rebuild and heal. And as I got involved in this and I started to looking at all the things that were happening, and I remember my father used to talk about Black Bottom a lot. He said Black folks used to have fun, but where were we going with this, okay? And, you know, and then we stayed in Black Bottom for about 10 years until the late, when I was 1 year old when we moved out, and we moved to west side of Detroit. And I remember my sister going to Duffield Middle School, elementary, right down on that street called Macomb, where Macomb was the first owner of slaves. And so, you know, it was the best of times and it was the worst of times, how you can put it. But I'm excited because we get a chance to create a new economy for Black folks. You know, we've been left out the American dream, and our slice of the pie has been diminished. And so I'm excited. Yeah, I know Lauren is excited. We've been talking about this. We've been meeting. And, you know, we're not trying to push nothing down people's throats. We're not trying to be, you know, it's cause a racial conflict. But Black folks are due.
Yeah, yeah. Your reference there to Black Bottom, for listeners who are unfamiliar, Black Bottom was a neighborhood near where Lafayette Park is right now, where African Americans lived for a very long time. It had its own culture and economy. It had its own wonderful existence and life, and it was destroyed in part because of the building of the Chrysler Freeway, I-75, through the middle of downtown. Lauren Hood, same question to you. What does it mean to try to stare this stuff in the face and come up with a way to make it right?
It means we have a long road ahead.
It's a lot of work, right?
I am most excited to address, we talk about gaps all the time. The one that's prominent in my mind is this gap between Detroit's present and our potential. I feel like reparations is just a step in us getting to where we could be. I think that Black folks for a long time, there's so much. I think there's a spiritual component, a holistic component, and then there's this financial redress that needs to happen. But I would argue that the government acknowledging that the condition of our neighborhoods is not our fault goes a long way in us being responsible for getting to where we could be. But I think we need to hear and embody that the condition of our neighborhoods isn't because of, you know, a deficiency that we have. It was intentional and beyond our control.
Yeah. So I want to make sure that we explain pretty clearly to people what the task force is doing and what the expectations are. At the end of this, you could have a lot of proposals for change in our community, things we could do differently, but it's actually not the task force's job to implement some of these things that you recommend. It really is something, Lauren, as you point out, that's a first step to dealing with these things. This is about study and recommendation. Is that right?
Correct. And I think one of our first recommendations needs to be that there is some sort of governing body that can help execute on this in perpetuity. It is not like the task force ends in 18 months, but I think, again, one of our first recommendations is what is the group, the governing body that can hold institutions and government accountable for delivering on what our recommendations are? There has to be some framework for continuing the work after the 18 months.
Yeah. Keith, talk a little about the committee, what people's roles are and look like, what kinds of knowledge and skills people are bringing to the table? I know it's early, but.
Hey, I just say this. We're just coming together. And I tell when my neighbors will hit me with stuff. I said, Rome wasn't built in a day, okay? So now we are trying to get acclimated to each other's way of doing things. And like Lauren said, hopefully we come up with a good product that will go on in perpetuity, not file 13. You know, stuff like in the past, thing goes into file 13. Mm-hmm. You never see it again, okay?
That's such an old phrase. I love that you said that.
I don't want to see stuff just get thrown away after the hard work and all the ingenuity and the effort we put into this, because I'm serious about this. I'm tired of driving down streets of degradation and poverty and things like that. I'm tired of seeing my kids not getting educated to a point where, you know, they can close the wealth gap and the education gap. I'm just tired of those kind of things. You know, this is about redress, and we didn't cause the problem. We didn't ask ourselves to be enslaved. They did it, and so they should repay for it. And so, you know, folks gonna say, "Well, I had nothing to do with it," but you benefited from it. Legacy. The legacy is a big word in this process, okay? Mm-hmm. And so we're not asking for a handout. We're just asking for a hand up. Am I right or wrong, Lauren?
You're right.
I'm talking with Lauren Hood and Keith Williams. They are the co-chairs of Detroit's Reparations Task Force. The task force had its first public meeting on April 13th. We're talking about the work ahead for the task force and the things that might come out of it. What kinds of change might close some of the gaps that exist between black and white existence here in Southeast Michigan. We would love to hear from you listeners during the conversation as well. What do you make about this idea of reparations for African Americans? What do you make about the idea of trying to do this at the local level, like we are here in the city of Detroit? What do you think would be part of a proposal to make things more equal between black and white? What would give people a fairer shot at opportunity and even thriving here in Detroit? Also, if you just have questions for the Detroit Reparations Task Force, how it's working, what it will do, this is the time to call and ask. Also, would love to hear from folks who don't think this is a great idea. Maybe you think reparations can't work or that it won't solve the problems that we have. Always welcome everybody's voice in the conversation. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. Lauren, I want to talk just a little about the scope of the work here. I think when you say the word reparations, often what people think about is slavery, and they put it into the context of slavery, and they don't think about the things that have happened in the 170 some years since slavery. The idea of reparations really is about looking at that fuller picture, and I feel like there's some education that has to take place with a lot of folks about that time period and what's happened. People don't know a lot of times about Black Bottom. People don't know about the housing discrimination that created the suburbs, for instance, here in Detroit and left a lot of people behind and out of that wealth opportunity. Put this all in a little bit of context for us.
Well, I think it's going to be a learning journey for all of us. You know, we're representing different disciplines on this task force, but there is an education that needs to happen. And it's funny you talk about starting with slavery. I've seen, you know, I read the comments on all the articles about reparations because I wanted to know what the dissent was. What's the root of the dissent?
The articles.
And a lot of people said, you know, slavery didn't happen in the North. Yes, there were slaveholders in Detroit. Yes, there were.
Keith Williams has talked about Macomb is a great example.
Absolutely.
Of that.
Yeah. But also, I think that in Detroit specifically, the time period that comes up is the period of urban renewal. So you look at city government and leadership was responsible for the displacement of Black Bottom and Paradise Valley. So I think that, you know, what the resolution establishing us calls for addressing housing issues and economic development. And I think that most of us will start with that particular period in Detroit and think about, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s as a beginning point for addressing things like, yes, the redlining and the displacement. But it should be more comprehensive.
Talk about some of the other things that are part of the equation.
I appreciate the fact that it says economic development because you can put a lot in there. Mm-hmm. But I think we need, if policy was what got us here, we need policy to help get us out. Mm-hmm. And if the harms transcended multiple generations, the healing or the redress also needs to be that comprehensive. So what can that look like to have policy that heals? It sets us up to thrive versus that policy that was extractive and harmed us.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to social media, to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today. Let's start today with Frank in Green Oak Township. Frank, welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning, Stephen. You know, I'd really like to say that the word reparations is like a dog whistle to, a large number of people. And, on one side, the people that support these things like myself, I hear a lot of people that they want to punish somebody and they want to take something away from somebody and give it to somebody else. And, you know, that's just that's a fight. That's another front in the culture wars. But to use that word reparations is really counterproductive, and it just is, you know, you're just not going to get anything started. One of the things you need are, like, say, people of the Republican Party, if you frame this up as economic opportunity and bringing people into the wider economy and keep focus on that, which means education, you know, that Ken Griffith just gave $300 million to Harvard University. You know, what good is that $300 million going to do to people that attend Harvard who have every opportunity, that we could imagine? Mm-hmm. Instead, you know, if we don't get kids reading by the third grade level, good luck. There's nothing, you know, that window closes, brain development.
Yeah. So Frank, I want to start with the initial question you asked, which is about the word reparations and the way that some people react to it. I don't necessarily agree with you, but tell me what word makes more sense to you. I'm really curious what word you would use for this exercise.
That's interesting. I think as being a white male, with all that carries, the opportunity that we have, to appeal to, the vast majority of people, they were going to say, like, yes, economic opportunity, things were wrong and we got to move people into this wider, just economy. And I think that's the thing economic justice is what our government should be all about. That's what our culture should be all about. And that's what I would look for, something like words like economic justice.
Okay. Frank, I really appreciate you calling and I appreciate you playing along with me, coming up with a phrase of your own there. Keith Williams, I give you the first crack at answering, Frank. This is a conversation I find myself in not infrequently, where people don't like either the word or the implication. Like Frank said, this idea of taking away from some people to give to others.
I want to say this to Frank. Brookings Institute did a report last year, and it's from this perspective. It says today the average white family has roughly 10 times the amount of wealth as the average black family. White college graduates have over 7 times more wealth than the black college student. Then it went on to say in 1860, $3 billion was the value assigned to physical bodies of enslaved black Americans. Then it went on to say that $360 billion was the estimate of the work of the folks who were working in slave fields. So to me, I get it. But at the end of the day, ask Frank, can he acknowledge the harm that was caused?
I think Frank is saying that. Yes. he does acknowledge that. I think what he's saying is about strategy. I think what he's getting at is, how do you convince white people, in particular, that this is something that needs to be done?
I got an idea.
Yeah,
that's why I say rebuild, repair, and heal. Okay, and to the marginalized communities around the country. Okay, if that's going to sugarcoat a little bit, rebuild, repair, and heal.
And heal. Yeah, I like those words.
Yes, because it's got a lot of, you know, rebuild. Economic developers want them to rebuild, don't they? And then you got the church community want to repair and heal. So, yeah, you know, that's why I come from that perspective.
Yeah. Lauren, at the same time, I have this thing about truth-telling and the importance of truth-telling.
Yeah.
But I hear Frank when he says, look, the people that he knows, the people in his community, react really differently than we do to that truth-telling.
It's unfortunate that the word is so politically charged. Like, it's a perfect word. At the root of reparations is the word repair, right? And that's what we're trying to do. But also, like, I feel like the suburbs, Bob in Livonia is worried that reparations are going to attack his savings account.
Yes.
That is not what this is.
Yes.
I think we want something beyond a cash payment. If you give me a check, but I still have to live like a second class citizen here, like, we haven't done reparations. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, my liberation doesn't exist in somebody else's bank account. There is something more to be had from this process.
Yeah.
So people need to stop being scared that we're coming for your savings. That is not what this looks like.
Yeah, I want to talk a little more about that when we come back. We do need to take a break, and we need to thank Keith Williams for being here.
He's got
to run to another appointment. Good luck in the work, and really appreciate you stopping by. Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue talking about reparations with Lauren Hood, the co-chair of the Detroit Reparations Task Force. We'll also continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. Tim and Adelia in Detroit City in the Cass Corridor. You'll be up next if you want to join them. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us. Right now, we've got Lauren Hood with us in the studio. She's a writer, a city planner, and a community developer. She is also the co-chair of Detroit's Reparations Task Force, something that 80% of voters in the city in 2021 said they wanted, a way to think about the history of inequality and discrimination locally here in the city of Detroit, and some way to come up with ideas to fill those gaps. How do you make life more equitable for African Americans who have borne the brunt of historic and systemic discrimination since before the city or the nation were even founded? That's what we're talking about today, and we want to hear from you on the phones and on social as well. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in the show that way. Before we go back to the phones, Lauren, I want to follow up on something that you were just talking about with regard to the nature and the shape of this idea of reparations, that it isn't just about paying somebody for the wrongs that were done to them. It is about changing the infrastructure that we live with now to be sure that opportunity is more equal, so that into the future, things work out a lot better. That's something that I think about a lot here in our community. And one of my real frustrations, in fact, is that that does not become part of the conversation when we are talking about things that are so clearly connected to this inequality. And I'll give you a couple of examples. One is this project that's on the board to fill in I-375 and recreate a neighborhood where Black Bottom and some other communities once existed. We keep hearing from people who are really excited about this, and the state has these really interesting drawings of communities that they'd like to build. But what's not really front and center in that conversation is the fact that you don't have to look that far, really, to find many of the families who were specifically displaced because of the building of I-375, who lost everything because it was taken from them. Another example of that for me is the discussion about property tax over assessment here in the city of Detroit, right? There are all kinds of people, mostly African Americans, who lost their homes because of those over assessments. Now, that over assessment is not itself a discriminatory act. It is something that happened, though, in a city where people's lives were already affected by discrimination over a long period of time. And so when we talk about how to make those folks whole, we should be talking about it in the context of not just what happened now, but what happened to put them in a position that overassessment was so catastrophic for them. And I think when we talk about reparations, these are the things that we are really talking about.
Agreed, 100%. And I would say, I think it's a strategy on the part of people that are and have been working on the foreclosure crisis that they don't use the word reparations. So they are talking about address, but using a different language, which I think likely helps their case in a lot of ways. Based on that caller. Once you put the word reparations in there, people want to fight against it. But there are people talking about and working on redress for people that have been foreclosed upon. And you're right about I-375. I think it's a real-time case study where our task force can have some actual impact. It's interesting, like MDOT's leading that process. Mm-hmm. Like, who applies to go work at MDOT? Those are transportation folks. They don't necessarily come to the table with, a background or a lens towards social justice that isn't necessarily their area of expertise. So I think that there is, however, room to influence that process. Mm-hmm. So there are some local advisory committees that have been convened. I think we could get some more people at the table in those conversations. But I do think there is room to influence outcomes.
Yeah. And influence outcomes in a systemic way. That
Certainly.
Is the thing that we always, I feel like, miss in Detroit is we want to deal with things as they happen. And we're not thinking about, again, that
generations into the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So if the Federal Highway Act, was the root of this evil, it also needs to be the root of the redress.
Right.
So, yeah, what can we do locally and at the state level to leverage influence in that direction?
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. I'm going to read a couple of social media comments before we go back to the phones. Big Neo says, the best reparation would be to require racist individuals to abandon that mentality. Unfortunately, I don't see that happening because you cannot control what people think and feel. So in lieu of that, cut me a 7-figure or higher check. Big Neo, I think, being a little facetious there. Amanda on Twitter says, your guest mentioned policy. Is the group going to examine the laws and policies that harmed and continue to harm Black folks and make recommendations about how to legislate out the possibility of future abuse? We were just talking about that you do expect that to be part of the work, right?
Absolutely. And what I want people to understand is it just not the expertise of the 13 people on the task force that we're applying to this. So we did get approved for a $350,000 budget, of which we will use to hire consultants and researchers and experts to advise and let us know what is legally possible. So yes, we will absolutely be looking at public policy.
Yeah. Dragon Lady on Twitter says, the same people who are against CRT, critical race theory, are the ones against reparations because they don't want to admit that structural racism exists and caused harm, still causes harm. Let's go back to the phones here. Let's start with Chris in Dearborn Heights. Chris, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Hey.
First time caller.
Yeah, great. We love that.
Okay, yeah. You know, I'm all for this reparations thing, but, you know, I am of Cherokee descent, a Native American, and I feel like if they're going to do this with the African American community, they also need to do it with the Indigenous people community. You know, we were, you know, completely colonized. We were, our men, our, you know, women and children were raped and murdered. We still live on reservations to this day. You know, so if they're going to do this with the African American folks, then they also need to do it with the Indigenous people, Native Americans, because, you know, they're still been on the back burner for some time now. And, you know, you don't hear much from the Native American community or the Indigenous people because they still live it on reservations and stuff like that. So I feel like if they're going to open the book up to reparations for them, that it also we should have reparations for the Indigenous American Native people.
Yeah. Chris, really appreciate you calling and making that point. Lauren, talk about the way the task force, first of all, will deal with inequalities of all kinds. I mean, the Indigenous population here, even before African Americans were in Detroit, were subject to historic kinds of discrimination as well. Is that within the purview of this task force?
Not explicitly. However, it's my contention that that's the original sin. And if you don't address that, nothing we do will be what it can be, be as good as it can be. So I do think that is something to consider. I don't know what the appetite is for the rest of the body. I myself actually have a meeting later with a Native American leader to talk about this.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not sure, again, what our collective appetite is for it, but I do believe if you don't address that harm, nothing else will be as stable or, you know, as good as it could be.
Yeah. I mean, we often get into these arguments about whose past was more harmful or is more
the struggle Olympics,
right?
The suffering Olympics,
right.
Yeah.
And I always say that, you know, everyone's experience is kind of different and somewhat individualized, but the common thread is discrimination. The common thread is inequality. And I think rallying around that as a way of trying to address all of these things makes the most sense, rather than talking about whose consequences were what or more.
And I think the angle we'll have to take, I was reading about some of the work they're doing in California, and one of the task force members said it's about harm and not about race.
That's right.
So if we craft this policy to address harm, it encompasses more people than just Black folks.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, really appreciate the call and the great comments. And call again. I love that you were a first-time caller. Let's go next to Robert in Detroit. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hi. Yes, I'm just calling to show such gratitude. I was born in Detroit, raised in war. My parents moved out during the 67 riots and back here in Detroit for 30 years and have learned self-love through the Black community and such great respect. I go to a Unity Church with Reverend Gregory Geis.
Yeah.
The love and you know, I say Black folks have been through hell and back a few times. Nothing can get to them anymore. And until we do start speaking some truth in these high schools, what went on with the Native people, you know, the Europeans and the Native didn't get together, have a meal, and it was all good, you know.
Yeah.
And we really need to start speaking some truth of what's really gone on.
Right.
Having high respect. I believe that Black folks are the mothers and fathers of us white people and that we have lots to learn.
Yeah. Robert, I really appreciate you calling and saying those things. I think, again, you know, there are people in every part of our community who really have a strong emotion, really, I think, about the work that's going on and the conversations that we are finally having about this history. Let's go next to Tim in Detroit. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, first of all, I want to say all white people in America are immigrants, okay? The people that are here in America from Europe, Europe didn't have a middle class in the beginning, okay? The people that came here are from the asylums, the prisons, the streets, and the poorhouses of Europe. When they got here, they gave them land. They put them over black people because, you know, most of them people, they weren't considered white people when they came. Only Anglos were considered white.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they talk about giving us reparation, they're not giving us anything. They owe us because it would be no America without the stolen labor of black people.
Tim, I really appreciate the call and the comments. Lauren, respond to what he's saying there. I mean, he's talking about the point that he was making, I think, is really important, that when white immigrants came to America,
yes,
there were advantages that were built in for them. And I'm always very careful about how I talk about those things,
right,
because this is not about what somebody else has or doesn't. It is about the denial of that same opportunity to us and to other people. And so when you have, white Americans who are struggling, right, who are not enjoying the kind of opportunity that they might imagine they should, that becomes a reason to say, well, I'm not a beneficiary of,
yes,
of these things. But it's not about your benefit. It is about our denial.
Well, I struggle also with the framing that black people need something from white people for repair to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We need something from government and from institutions. It's not a person-to-person proposition. So when I hear people say those things, I mean, yes, it draws to light the problem we're trying to address, but I really want people to understand that it is not black
it's
folks
not about
getting
individual
something from white folks. Yeah,
right.
It's not person to person.
Right.
And I would argue, I don't think that white folks are whole right now either. We all have something to gain by getting in right relationship.
And the idea that equity for African Americans is something that will benefit everybody. The idea that treating everyone with the same level of respect and fairness, giving everyone equal opportunity, doesn't mean that some people will lose. It means, I think, that everybody benefits more. That's a really hard case to make because we live in a society, I think, that is it is about this idea of limited opportunity, of finite resource. But I do believe, I really believe that equity would create more for everyone.
And it's not about an inverted racial hierarchy. It's not black people are on the bottom and we want to be on the top. It's about an elimination of a racial hierarchy.
That's right. That's right. Okay, we do need to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Lauren Hood, co-chair of the Detroit Reparations Task Force. We'll also continue on the phones and on social. Adriel in Detroit, Delia in Westland, Rich in Roseville, John in Royal Oak. We will get to you next. Stay with us for more Detroit Today. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and our guest is Lauren Hood. She is the co-chair of the Detroit Reparations Task Force, and that's what we're talking about, reparations and the discussion underway in the city of Detroit about how we might make things right, given the history of institutional discrimination against African-Americans in our city. Want to hear from you as well on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number. And you can go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in the conversation that way. Lauren, before we go back to listeners, I do want to talk about some of these other cities that are at least experimenting with this idea. People invoke Evanston, Illinois a lot, and Amherst, Massachusetts. And as I said in the open to the show, the state of California has got a reparations task force. I wonder if there's something that you're seeing in some of these other communities that you think might be helpful in the way that we noodle through this here in Detroit.
Provide a critical analysis of what's being done in other places. You know, people hold up Evanston as this exemplar of what could be done here. But in reading more about it, you know, it's a housing voucher.
That's what they've decided to do for African Americans.
Exactly. So you can use it in certain places towards a down payment of a house. But I was reading a lot of the descendants that qualified for it were like in their 70s and 80s. They're like, so I'm going to use this to apply for a mortgage at my age. So a couple of people turned it down, and they actually then were awarded by city council just a cash payment. But it really, sometimes it's like a coupon for a store that doesn't sell what you want. So we want to make sure that if we are talking about cash payments, it's actually unrestricted.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's that structural approach rather than, hey, here's this individual problem. Let's try to solve this way. It's almost a reverse engineering that you need. What's the big picture issue? Solve it at that level. And then you get these smaller, you know, instances of programs and things that would make sense in that bigger picture.
Yeah, and sometimes I think we have to make sure that we're actually doing reparations and not just like a housing program. Mm-hmm. It needs a couple of different components. So I think for it to be holistic reparations, it needs to be an acknowledgement of the harm, some form of redress, and again, that assurance that it won't happen again.
Yeah. I also want to ask some practical questions that I hear people ask a lot. How do you identify, for instance, who would benefit from the things that you come up with? How do you identify someone who has actually been harmed? Or do you even bother with that? Do you just say this is a systemic problem, and so all people who lived in the city of Detroit from, you know, pick a date to now should benefit? I mean, there are some practical
It's
hurdles.
Tricky. I think it's a both and. I think in some of the current work in other places, you just have to prove that you are a resident of that place during a certain period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but these federal movements are having us prove that we're the actual descendants of slaves. So I think somewhere in between both of those is where we'll lie. And again, I think for this task force, a lot of our focus is around that period of urban renewal. So we can use things like census records and Sanborn maps to see who was actually here. It's not going to be that hard. But I think we also do need to use oral histories, and particular with Black Bottom, Black folks didn't own the property. So if we're looking at ownership records, you're not going to see us there.
Yeah.
So we're going to need to have folks doing oral history so we can hear straight from the horse's mouth who was there and who is worthy of redress.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Adelia in Westland. Adelia, welcome to the show.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, thank you so much for letting me on this wonderful show. I thank you again, Stephen, for bringing up a very poignant and popular topic of discussion in Detroit. You know, as a design professional, of the 12 to 15% professionals in downtown Detroit of color, I have been very active with this movement since 2016, just trying to get it to the mainstream of society because it was kind of a grassrootsy little group. And I jumped in it because I was concerned about contract opportunities in this town for Black professional firms. They were not getting their fair share of work, and we still aren't. So I decided to jump in the long haul version of this thing called reparations. And, you know, I think it's good that Detroit, city of Detroit has jumped in it after we got the vote up to 90% of Black people deciding, yes, we want this. We need this. We should get this. We deserve this. So I'm thankful that people are getting involved, creating task force, and all of that great stuff that we got to do to get done done. Now, the last part of my conversation around Black Bottom, I think instead of making other people richer, meaning closing up the freeway, giving them that $350 million, maybe we should give it to the reparations, Detroit Reparations Fund. You know, $350 million is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. You're not.
So
you're
we should just use our brains all the way if we can, if we can.
Yeah.
And think about what we're doing. Because if we're trying to give them money, they're going to get all the money in the front end of the game. And we're going to be sitting around waiting to build some new version of Hastings Street.
Yeah.
Put a nice statue over there and move on.
Adelia, okay? I love
so
that.
Much empty space.
I do love that idea.
Malls all over the east side. We can put little malls all over the east side and call them mini Black Bottom 2.0.
Yeah. Adelia, I love that idea. And look, I mean, we were talking earlier about my frustration with the conversation about filling in I-375 and how it is not focused on this. This kind of thing, you're right. $350 million is a lot of money, and there are things we could do with it. I mean, centering that in the conversation is the challenge, Lauren.
Yes. Well, if I'm not mistaken, that money is specifically earmarked for a certain kind of capital improvement project.
Right. It's MDOT money.
It
doesn't
come from a pot that could be applied toward reparations. Right. But, you know, when that project is all said and done, some 26 acres of developable land will become available, mm-hmm. and I think that's where we can start a conversation about who might get the net benefit from that land.
Right, and how to include people who have been left out and who 100%. Were pushed off of
not just include, land. But prioritize.
Right, right, absolutely. Again, Adelia, really appreciate the call and the questions. Let's go to John in Royal Oak. John, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good morning, sir.
Uh-huh.
As an old liberal white guy, I understand the concept of reparations, and I'm not necessarily in favor of it. And your caller about indigenous peoples hit the nail on the head that has to be addressed as well.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily, the sticking point in my mind is that without supply, there would have been no demand for slaves. And the warring African nations that sent their brothers and sisters into slavery bear guilt for creating the supply. And they should be involved in the conversation.
Hmm. John, I do appreciate the call and the comments. I mean, there's a lot in there that I would take issue with. But here's what I won't take issue with. Look, anybody who was responsible for slavery ought to be held accountable. And you're right. To the extent that Africans were involved, they should be held accountable. I think, though, that's not the point of this exercise. I think, and again, this idea of singling out people or groups of people is not the goal. The goal is to stop the discrimination itself and to right the wrongs created by that discrimination. And that is kind of a separate question from the idea of fixing blame. Am I right about that, Lauren?
I would agree with that. And that's all I want to say about that.
but again, I mean, so it's difficult. It's difficult to have these conversations because of that. I mean, look, as John says, he describes himself as
a liberal
person and somebody who supports the idea of reparations. It's hard to get people, when you drill down on the specifics of this, to
I think
really,
the global conversation is different than the local
really
conversation.
Different.
So he's talking about Africans.
Yes.
Like, we're talking about what we can do in Detroit, Michigan, United States.
Very different, right?
Very different.
And they aren't mutually exclusive, though. It's not that we're saying we don't want to talk about all of these other things or any of them. It's that what we're talking about right here doesn't have much to do with that.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. John, really do appreciate that you listen and appreciate that you called in to share your perspective. Okay, Lauren, we've only got about half a minute left, but I want you to just outline for us what's next, how this progresses.
Well, for the foreseeable future, probably till the end of the year, we'll be doing meetings every 2 weeks. We did forego what we had planned for a meeting this week because there are certain requirements that we couldn't meet within the timeline. So there are certain types of venues we have to use. There's a certain amount of notification time to post meeting information. We don't need to abide by the Open Meetings Act, but we're choosing to. So there are just some things that came up that don't allow us to have this meeting this week, but we will have one 2 weeks following from this Friday.
Okay. And everybody who's interested should absolutely step up and be involved in the process. Lauren Hood, always great to see you. Always great to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
for
Stephen.
Coming on the show today. All right. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow with more great programming here on Detroit Today. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station. Your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.